From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a small town in Maine, where football has been king on Friday nights for years. That's the story, of course, in towns across the country. Friday Night Lights was a hit for a reason. But in recent years, a trend has taken hold that some of these towns would not have believed possible a couple of decades ago. Some of these schools can't field enough players to play football, and they're turning to eight-man football teams. Earlier this summer, a coach in the Finger Lakes told me that, well, if they weren't willing to play eight-man ball, they'd have to quit. When I asked why, he said it was mostly the concern of the parents to put their kids on the field, knowing the risks of head injuries. In that town in Maine, eight-man football debuted in 2019 with 10 teams. This year, there will be nearly 30 playing eight-man ball there. At his Hall of Fame induction speech earlier this month, Peyton Manning put out a call to save the game of football. He said that safety advances have made the game better, safer, stronger, and a great place for kids to learn values. But if their parents don't believe it, the kids won't play, and there won't be a future for the game. I want to listen to part of what Peyton Manning said earlier this month.
I don't know about you, but I'm not done with this game. I never will be. I'm committed to ensuring its future, and I hope you will join me in that commitment. As members of this honored class, we have a responsibility to make our game stronger, from the corner playground to the most celebrated stadiums. During the past 2 years, the game of football has been challenged by an explosion of sports and entertainment options, safety concerns, erupting social justice issues, and a worldwide pandemic. Displaced fans have taken on an entirely new meaning as our stadiums have been shut down and fans shut out. We certainly shouldn't walk away now. When we leave this stage tonight, it is no longer about us. It is about cultivating the game that has given so much to us. It's about nurturing football to live and thrive another day, another year, decade, and another generation. It's about guaranteeing that kids everywhere can learn, bond, grow, and have fun with every flag pulled, every tackle made, every pass thrown, every run, block, sack, and touchdown scored. The audience here tonight is made up of diehard fans who feel football deep in your bones. Now, we may have ignited the fire, but you have fanned the flames. Inevitably, those flames will be whipped by the winds of change, but they don't need to smolder. The future of this game is ours to shape. We just need to take tomorrow on our shoulders as readily as we donned our pads before each game. Let this moment become a cherished memory. And then remember, a legacy is only worthwhile when there is a future to fuel. God bless you and God bless football.
That's Peyton Manning at his Hall of Fame induction. Here are some more numbers to back up his concerns. The Aspen Institute's initiative Project Play has data from two seasons ago. They write that there are now more than twice as many youth basketball players as youth football players. Football as a category trails baseball and soccer and is only slightly ahead of tennis. When parents were asked what their child's primary sport was last year, tackle football barely edged out gymnastics. Youth football participation reached an all-time high in 2009. It has been on the decline ever since, losing 20 to 30,000 players per year in overall participation. Coaches will tell you that Peyton Manning is right. The game has changed, and it's safer than ever. This hour, a conversation about safety, sports, and values. And our guests include Stephen Leon, who is Steve's the head football coach at Brighton High School. He's here with us in the studio. Coach, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Dr. Katie Rizzoni is on the line with us, a primary care sports medicine physician at UR Medicine. Dr. Rizzoni, thanks for making time.
Thanks so much.
So I want to take this conversation in a lot of different ways, and I want to invite the audience to let me know what you think here, because we really want to be as accurate as we can about what has changed in terms of helmet safety, the rules, et cetera. And I've got my own bias. I mean, did you see Baker Mayfield's touchdown pass last night? Was that a work of art? Coach Leon, that's a work of art, wasn't it?
I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan. A lot of people aren't, but I like him.
I don't think Josh Allen could have thrown that pass in 1,000 years.
I'm not going to say
that. I'm mostly kidding. He probably could. In fact, I think Josh Allen's going to be the MVP this year. I'm a big football fan, but I'm also a parent, and I get it. I get the concern. So, parents, if you want to join the conversation this hour, connections at WXXI.org. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Coach, how difficult is it to recruit players now versus, when did you start coaching?
I'm going into my 22nd season.
Okay.
The game's definitely changed. I think, with the explosion of club lacrosse, and you know, AAU basketball has always been a present thing. There's just more options for kids. And I think for us, the critical part is making sure kids know that we want them to enjoy those options too. I think where you're seeing, you know, different places where maybe participation numbers may be down are where children, families, whatever the case may be, feel pulled in certain directions and don't feel like they can do more than one thing. And I think the specialization pull of some of those other sports is what might be pulling some numbers away from football.
That's really interesting, because you know, we'll certainly talk about parental safety concern. Well, but this aspect of it, the way that we are pushing kids to do one sport for 12 months, you know, as a baseball coach, we're trying to extend our season into fall ball, but the last thing I would ever tell a kid is do this and only this all year. I mean, my kid loves playing basketball. He loves playing soccer. He loves playing baseball. You know, I grew up playing a lot of different things. I have a lot of different interests, and I think that is healthy for kids. I don't know when or why. When did you notice the hyper-specialization change?
You know, it's been something that's always been there throughout my career, but really over the last 5 to 10 years. And what I've noticed the most is with those club sports, they start younger and younger, and the emphasis grows younger and younger. And so by the time they get to high school, where students, children, just developmentally are starting to make choices for themselves and families are making choices, there's been a huge financial commitment. Mm-hmm. And I think regardless of, honestly, more than the safety concern, parents feel like, well, I've committed thousands and thousands of dollars, summers of travel into this avenue, whatever the sport may be.
Yep.
Football is one of those things that isn't that. We don't have club football. We don't have a privatization really yet of football. So your football experience is really tied to your scholastic team. And when it comes time for fall and there are continuing paid club opportunities, there are those families and players that feel pulled into that commitment and away from their school team.
You'll appreciate this about Coach Dawson, Coach Lynn. We told our fall ball kids, we're only going to play on the weekends and we're not practicing. You've been playing for 4 months. You can go practice football, soccer, anything else.
That's the best.
That meant that you got to balance it that way. So I take the point that there's this pull. I had a coach in the Finger Lakes tell me this summer, hey, the reason our baseball players are so good is because we tell the parents now that by the time your kid turns 9, you got to figure out what their one sport is. 9. I mean, come on.
It's wild. You know, I've been through it. I have 3 children of my own. My oldest is a freshman on our JV football team. And you see it developmentally, a 9-year-old. I mean, he was not what he is now. And he was playing other sports. And there was that drive to specialize in one of the other sports that he played. And he wasn't physically capable of doing that. And he didn't. And I really think that sport lost out because, you know, as you hit puberty, you change. And yeah, you have no way of predicting what a kid's going to turn out to be or what their interests are. I mean, I just hate the fact that a 9-year-old, you know, I have younger ones too, they like playing video games. They like, you know, superhero movies. They shouldn't be deciding what sport to specialize in.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And Dr. Rizzoni, what is the cost to the child if we are pushing more and more kids to specialize in a way that forces them to play one sport 12 months without diversifying their interests?
Yeah, well, first off, let me just say that Coach is spot on, you know, just with so many aspects of it, particularly with football not having as many of those feeder programs as compared to, like, soccer, baseball, things like that. And so, sorry, are you guys hearing an echo with me?
Yeah, it's pretty solid, Katie. If it's an issue, we can try to re-rack the call here.
Yeah, I just feel bad for anyone.
No, I think it's okay.
Okay. So in terms of your question to me specifically of the impacts of specialization, one is that how many stories are there like Michael Jordan not really becoming a great basketball player until later in his high school career? And, you know, to your point, 9 years old is really young to decide what sport you want to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
My aspect is then I'm seeing these kids get hurt, right? If you do the same motions over and over again, you're not cross training, it leads to increased risk of overuse injuries.
Doctor, let's make sure, maybe we can reestablish connection. We'll try. We'll make sure. We can hear you just fine. I just want to make sure you can hear okay. And Coach Lean, when it comes to recruiting now, is it different? Is it harder to build the program at Brighton than it used to be?
I think we're in a unique situation in Brighton. I took over at a point when the program was pretty low, and it has been something building within the community, our relationship with the community that's been the forefront of our vision kind of and how we do it. So we have not found it as difficult. I've been very fortunate in that. But that takes a lot of work. I think, you know, for us to do it, you know, I'm involved with our youth program down to the youngest level. I'm involved. Our players are involved with volunteering at those levels. So for us, it's a very much a family community situation. With football, as I know we'll get into later, the head injuries and concerns like that, it's very much a relationship activity. And what keeps you going through football, where you don't have as many games as other people, where you don't have the privatization, where you don't have all those other things, it's what kind of strong relationships have you built and relationships of trust with parents. That is something that for us, we make it a focal point of what we do. And so I think we've been fortunate. Our numbers right now are extremely high. We're very strong in our numbers at all different levels, but that doesn't come without a lot of hard work. And I think where maybe some of those places where they have tradition in the past, but the past doesn't really mean a lot nowadays. And if you try to ride on that and not continue to nurture those relationships year after year after year, as new families come up, as new players come up, I think that's where you're seeing some numbers suffer.
Yeah, I haven't seen, only in the smaller communities, more rural areas, am I seeing eight-man football yet. Are you hearing any concern about going all the way to eight-man anywhere close to here?
No. Fortunately for us in Monroe County, we're not. But that's not to say that we're immune to the declining numbers. I think if you look especially at the larger schools, the AA schools, you know, every team used to have, in my early coaching career, 50 guys on the roster year after year after year, and that's not the case anymore. I think it goes back again to the pull of specialization. I think it goes to are people doing enough in their communities to educate families, to build relationship with those families of trust so that they know that their child is safe with them. So many factors. But it is. It's still affecting us. We're not at the point where any Monroe County teams are considering eight-man,
yeah,
though.
Well, central to this conversation and something that Dr. Rizzoni and Coach Lean can talk about is really, truly how far we've come in terms of safety. Because I know this comes up with parents. And let me get a phone call that'll kick off that part of the conversation. This is Rich in Rochester. Hi, Rich. Is Rich there? Oh, there's Rich. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Yeah, talking about the safety issues, you watch it happen, and people talk about the safety being, but I don't think it's as, you know, I don't think the culture has changed. I think the coaches are it's still a violent sport. I think if you look at different sections of the country, you look at the Southeast, it's still a very hard physical game, but you go out west and you look at teams like huge USC Southern Cal fan for the last 50 years, and they suffer because they're not as physical as they used to be. And I get it, but as a fan, I it's driving me crazy to watch my big five-star recruits going to Alabama and Georgia because of the style of football. So we can talk about safety devices, but that's not the reality of it in many parts of the country. It's so safety is a huge issue still. And I even have, you know, anecdotal stories of friends in the last 5 years who have had children with really severe concussions from the sport. So we say these things, but the reality is it's not, I don't think it's playing out in many parts of the country. Texas and Oklahoma, the Alabamas, all these places.
Well, so Rich, I'm glad you called, and there's a lot there. And so what I want to do is I want to work through the violence of the game, how that sort of compares when you go to a youth level, how hard the hits are, how protective the helmets and the technology has been, the rules changes all the way from the NFL on down. And I think our guests can give us at least their view, and a more up-to-date picture here, because these changes take some time to take effect. Dr. Rizzoni, let me start with you. You know, Rich is concerned as a parent that we can talk all we want, but it is still a violent game, and the top programs promote a very violent style, and that concern goes all the way down to the youth level with concussion, et cetera. What do you see, and how do you view it?
So a lot of times at sports conferences, I'll be asked, hey, are you going to let your kids play football? Well, Coach Lynn was my son's math teacher, so
right.
I know he definitely values academics in addition to athletics. And so there are many changes that have been made, and some of it that I have to highlight much more than, you know, new equipment advances and things like that, because most of that time that doesn't necessarily trickle down at the community level, or, you know, you're using equipment that has been used before and not necessarily checked, you know, in terms of safety. It really goes back to the coaches. And forgive me, I didn't hear all of Rich's comment or question. We've been working on the tech difficulty, so sorry, Rich, if I'm not addressing exactly your point. But we know something like an Oklahoma drill, which if you haven't seen what that is, you can YouTube it very easily. And basically it's just two people going at it as hard as they possibly can. And that oftentimes leads to helmet-to-helmet contact or some type of cervical neck issue as well, especially anyone with any child, but particularly with a young man. You take 20, 15-year-old young men and you line them up on the field, and they're all over the place in terms of body mass and height and coordination. But something like that Oklahoma drill, we've really been recommending against for many, many years. And great coaches who have gone through, there's so many great concussion prevention training. Great coaches, you're not going to see as many injuries, whether that's football, whether it's cheerleading, whether it's soccer, because they know the activities that really put their athletes at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So you could put someone in the best helmet ever, and they are still going to be at a higher risk of injury if that coach is making them do head-to-head contact. The other thing that we've seen with football is that definitely that acclimatization period of no pads, no helmet, then adding back pads and helmet to make sure from a heat standpoint, you know, they're safe. Because if you're fatigued and you're dehydrated, you're going to be at a higher risk for injury as well. But a lot of even college level, even high Division I level sports have gone to lower contact during the week, same with NFL teams, and they've really seen a decrease in injury, and it's still, they've been able to work on plays, they've been able to work on technique without the same number of injuries. So certainly I think coaching knowledge and experience, obviously coaching with that many years of experience, you can't just read a book about that, right?
Sure.
But I also think partially what parents can do more than this is the make and model of the football helmet is how long is this coach for, and how do they go about interacting with their players?
Yeah, and we'll talk to Coach Lynn about that in just a second, but let me just follow up and ask you, how much better are the helmets today than they were a decade, two decades ago? And is there a standard helmet, you know, or is it different from program to program as you understand it, Doctor?
I mean, there's certainly recommendations. We want them, you know, to be updated, and certainly making sure the fit is appropriate as well. But certainly there are more recommended brands. You can Google in terms of like safety backgrounds of those. And like the Aspen Sport Institute has some recommendations. So you can find that information out there. And so, yeah, off the top of my head, I don't think that there's one brand that's better than the other, but it's making sure they're updated, making sure if there's broken components on it, that those are replaced, and then making sure that it fits someone appropriately. Because again, someone who's like, you know, 5'8 and 160 pounds, 15-year-old versus a 5'2, you know, 110-pound 15-year-old needs two totally different size helmets.
So Coach, let me just ask about the helmets first. Then we're going to talk about how you practice.
Sure.
How do you see the difference?
So for us, you know, like helmet technology has advanced so much just over my coaching career, let alone when I played. A lot of what they do with engineering now with helmets is kind of take from the model of cars and the way that the cars have developed the crumple zones. So when you're in an impact, it displaces the impact to protect the passenger inside. So in this case, the passenger inside being the brain inside the helmet, they are designed with impact crumple zones. So the way the helmet feels upon impact is night and day from what it was when I played. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of the technology of the helmet, and Dr. Rizzoni hit it head on, is you can't prevent anything. You get hit in the head, right? So many of the concussions, at least in my experience, have been less about the head-to-head contact part, because that's been really kind of taken out of the game with the way the rules have been developed. And it's the whiplash action, right? The shaking of the head. And so that goes back to, she touched on, are you playing developmentally appropriate rules, football?
What causes the whiplash?
Any number of things. You know, when you see a kid fall and the head bounces off the ground, mm-hmm. a lot of times if a concussion results in that, it's not necessarily the head hitting the ground, but the head bouncing off the ground mm-hmm. and that shake, high impact. So that goes back to, as at the high school level, how critical strength conditioning is. Right, it's not just when we were kids, show up in August, you play football and just go right into it. There is a strength and conditioning piece that I think is very much a requirement of participation these days. But you have younger kids playing, right? So that's why there's different leagues and rules going down, you know, scaffolded down to make it developmentally appropriate for the development of those kids.
Okay, and when she talks about practices, drills, what you are choosing as a coach, do you agree with her that the best programs now are doing it pretty differently than the ones that are, higher contact, maybe a little bit more old school, Oklahoma drills, et cetera? Is there a pretty wide gap there?
100%. I mean, we are only in full pads once a week during the week for practice. Even when we are in full pads, we rarely ever tackle anybody to the ground. We work on tackling all the time. We work on safe techniques, drilling. There's drills that you do without pads to teach it the right way. That's stuff that we're working on all the time. But in terms of that full-out contact, there's so many layers to that. If you're a coach, one, the last thing you want is a player getting injured in practice and not being available for the game. Two, if you're a coach that's aware, like with the whole conversation that we're having, there are lower participation numbers across the country in football. So the last thing you would want to do is have the perception, or even worse, the reality that you are not taking care of your players. You know, I always say to the parents that we have, you're trusting me with your son. I'm going to return your son just the way I got him. And that's a huge responsibility of ours. So those Oklahoma drills, I haven't done those in well over 10 years, if even that, maybe longer than that. All the drills that we do are very carefully sequenced upon what's their ability level, what are they ready for, absolutely matching up players that are appropriate. So we have that whole, you know, force equals mass times acceleration. We're not trying to put people in dangerous situations in practice.
Jesse wants to know via email, which sports are causing the most injuries at the high school and youth levels? I'll ask both of you about that, because I think, Coach, before this program, you and I talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, you deal with injuries, and sometimes it's players who got injured playing other sports. Now, it sounds like I'm doing PR for football here, but that is what you told me, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, injuries are part of life. Forget sports. You know, people are going to hurt themselves. The one injury we've had that kept a player out so far this preseason was when they were running around before practice and rolled their ankle in the grass. I mean, it wasn't even practice related. In terms of concussions, we've been very lucky, and I'm going to knock on wood right now, but over my time in Brighton in fall sports, there, without naming names, there have been many other varsity sports that have had much higher rates of concussions than our football team. Part of that is a huge probably luck, but also I think we do things the right way. You talk about the equipment, and it's not only the fit, right? We're fortunate enough, our Kyle Fenn from Rydell comes and personally fits our players to make sure it's the right fit. But then it's also the maintenance. I have an assistant coach who's very big on every single day, checking to make sure the air is not gone out of the helmet, that everything is still the way it needs to be adjusted. Everything's tightened up. So it's not just it's fit in August and then we don't check it again for the rest of the season. I mean, it's a daily thing if you want to keep your players healthy.
Okay. Dr. Rizzoni, what would you say to Jesse who emailed asking what are the sports that cause the most injuries to youth players?
First, I just got to give a lot of credit to Coach. And if anyone's out there who's in the community or a youth coach, a younger football coach in their process of their career, take notes of what he just said, because I actually disagree. I don't think it's luck. You haven't had good luck to have not a lot of concussions. I think it's because you've been very proactive about preventing them. And, you know, I just want to back up just a little bit about the neck strength. You know, we know that working on neck stability and neck strength can definitely decrease concussion risk of any sport, not just football. And again, to go back to the fact that you could have the fanciest, most expensive football helmet, period, on your head, but if your chin strap is loose or is malfitting, your head's going to be bobbling around. So, you know, checking to make sure during the season is really, really important. Now, to go back to Jesse's question, we know if you look for just a concussion standpoint, certainly football is still up there. But we know that ice hockey, both men's and women's, but particularly men, and soccer, both men's and women's, but particularly women's soccer, and then cheerleading is the other activity that more and more, like competitive cheer, has gotten more popular recently. It wasn't classified, unfortunately, as a true sport until recently. And so we're really just starting to understand epidemiologically what the numbers are concussion-wise. And women's cheerleading, competitive cheer, is probably right up there with football in terms of concussion injuries. In terms of other common injuries that we really want to prevent happening in Acton teens, you have things like ACL tears. You have things like ankle sprains. And honestly, we're going to see way more ACL tears in women's basketball and women's soccer in comparison to men's football. And ankle sprains, as Coach pointed out, can happen anywhere. And, you know, I have to also make the point that just looking at sheer numbers, more kids are hurt because they're not wearing bike helmets as they're riding their bikes around just recreationally in comparison to football.
Talking to Dr. Katie Rizzoni, who is a primary care sports medicine physician at UR Medicine. And Stephen Leon is here. Steve is head football coach at Brighton High School. Since when at Brighton, by the way? How long have you been at Brighton?
12 years.
At 12 years. We're going to take our only break of the hour, and we've got some phone calls to share. We've got some emails to share. No surprise, we've got a pretty wide range of views being shared by listeners, and I think that's healthy. And we will also talk a little bit about you know, some of the concerns raised that you've probably seen in publications like the Washington Post, et cetera. We're just trying to be as accurate and fair as we can as we talk about the decline in the participation rates in youth football, the work that's being done, whether it's Coach Leon or you heard Peyton Manning and others trying to turn that around, and their recognition that really is only going to happen if parents trust it. If parents trust that the work that's being done, the way the game is coached, practiced, and the technology put into the safety equipment is good enough for their kids. So let's take this only break. We'll come back to your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about pornography and how kids discover it. A number of writers have recently written that it is time for schools to engage with pornography, not to teach it in classrooms, but to teach about it, to make sure kids understand what it is, how it's made, and what it isn't, what it shouldn't be. But the purists say that's the wrong thing to be teaching about. We'll discuss it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Evie on line two. Go ahead, Evie.
Hi. I just wanted to say I have a 9-year-old son who is in love with football, and I've always said that I would never let him play full tackle. He just started playing in Brighton, and having done a ton of research and spoken to pediatricians and coaches and parents, I am now completely comfortable with him in the hands of these coaches.
What changed that for you?
I'm sorry, can you please say that again?
Yeah, what specifically changed that for you when you say you talked to parents?
So I was concerned. about the physical injuries, but I was also concerned about the culture and, you know, the attitude, the perspectives that, you know, we watch a lot of football at home. Joan is in love with football. And there's a lot of aggression also, and there's, you know, some things that I'm not really comfortable with my son getting really involved with. What I've seen in Brighton is that the coaches are attentive. They know each of their players individually. They work on physical skills, but also their ability to be a good sport, their ability to be a good team player. They talk about their attitude towards their own team and towards the teams that they're facing. And just all around from every perspective, I have been so impressed with the work that's being done there.
Well, Coach Lane, I know that's what you're going for, but Evie brings up, hang on there for one sec, Evie, because the word that she brought up that I think is really important is culture. There's this idea that, and I think some of that was sort of probably stoked for years in highlight reels where, you know, the biggest hits, the hardest hits, the most bone-shattering hits, the head-rattling hits, the culture of aggression, et cetera. Her mind has changed, but it took a while to get there. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and it's not uncommon. I think,
Evan, if you're still talking to me, I'm really sorry you're cutting out on me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Evie, awesome. I appreciate the feedback, and I know the coach does as well. So I'll let Evie go. How common is this to hear it like that?
Well, first of all, I appreciate hearing that. That tells me that all those guys coaching youth football are doing a great job and hearing the message. You know, culture is a huge part of it. And I think, you know, Peyton Manning kind of touched on it too, is that we do have to evolve. You know, I think football now isn't what football was 10 years ago, not what it was 30 years ago. The game has to evolve. And I think those that are stuck in the past, you know, we had the caller earlier who talks about, you know, the South and this and that. You know, I was fortunate enough to play college football in Ohio and had teammates from Texas and Florida and all those places that he mentioned. And yes, there's a different kind of culture there, but he's also highlighting, I know he mentioned colleges and he highlighted Division I programs and he highlighted that level. You know, that's a business. I know we like to call it college football and it's amateurism, but Division I college football is a business.
It is, yeah.
That's a different model. What we're talking about with high school and youth, it is incumbent upon, like Peyton Manning mentioned, being caretakers of the game. That includes your, you know, six-year-old level flag football coach. Every parent, you know, mom or dad who wants to volunteer, you are caretakers of the game. You're not just there to coach your child. We have a responsibility to make sure that parents, like our caller, are comfortable with what's happening. And that's incumbent upon everything that we do. I would also say that, you know, she probably is comfortable. We had actually scrimmage yesterday at the youth level, and I was standing there watching my seven-year-old who's playing at the C team level play. And I said to another dad, I wish that any parent who's concerned could just come here and watch this, because at that level, they're wearing all this heavy equipment. The fastest kid that you see on the playground, once they put on all that equipment, slows down a lot. The acceleration is now taken down a notch, right? They're not very massive. So when you talk about the force generated on a tackle, it was aggressive hug, fall down after aggressive hug, fall down the whole day. There's no big hits at that level because they're not capable of it. And part of that is the youth leagues that do it right have age restrictions, weight restrictions, have rules in place. There's some leagues that shrink the field. There's some leagues at the youngest level that have modified tackle. There's all kinds of things in place that people are doing now to make sure that kids are safe.
Well, I want to ask both of you one more question on the culture side here. First of all, on the tackle side of football, it's flag football until what age, and it's tackle starts when, Coach?
Depending on the league, but usually around your seven, when you're 7 years old, depending on when your birthday is, you play flag. So 5, 6, 7, and then 7 to 8 or 9 is the first introductory level of it, and then it goes up until roughly 7th grade.
Okay. Certainly you hear this on the pro level. You hear this in college. You hear people, whether it's coaches, players, fans, saying, I can't believe they flagged this hit for spearing or for leading with the helmet. What else is he supposed to do? The game moves fast. I mean, we all know the Browns would have beaten the Chiefs in the playoffs if Rashard Higgins hadn't gotten speared helmet to helmet at the goal line, and then he fumbles across the goal line, and the worst rule in sports gets invoked when he fumbles out of bounds over the end line. We all know that was, of course, it was Cleveland. But, I mean, that was a helmet-to-helmet hit that wasn't called. I know the game moves fast. What I don't accept is this idea that you can't teach somebody not to tackle or lead with their head. I don't accept that. And I don't know that kids naturally do that. Maybe they do. I don't remember. I mean, I didn't play football very much at an organized level growing up, a little bit. But, like, is that something that's natural, or is that something that they have to be taught to do?
No, I mean, and that's the thing. I am guilty as charged. When those rules started changing earlier in my career, I was one of those coaches. Man, what are we supposed to do? That was legal a year ago. Why are we getting flagged now? But as you take a step back, one, yeah, you know what? We want to keep our kids safe. Two, we want this game to keep going, right? So if we don't change and just sit here and complain, what good does that do? That, like so many things, you complain into the wind, but nothing positive comes from it. So solution-based is, let's look at the younger levels and teach them different techniques. I very rarely, I remember growing up on the playground, seeing your kids play in the yard, whatever they're playing, whether they're my little boy, when they were younger, wrestling, no one's leading with their head. I mean, I think you instinctually know that when I get hit in the head, it hurts. No one's trying to like hit with the crown of their head as a little kid, right? So if we teach the correct techniques as soon as a kid starts playing, that's all they know. Then if all they know is how to do it with their head out of the game, then that's what the game's going to become.
Yeah, Dr. Rizzoni, I've got to think that you agree with that, because when we've got players leading with their heads, I get very, very nervous about what that can do, not only in the moment, but to long-term injury. And second of all, I am glad to hear that Coach Lynn and so many others feel like if we clean that up at the youth level, eventually you won't really see that very often at the top college and pro levels. What do you think, Doctor?
Oh, yeah, totally agree. And I think this really, and I think Coach said this, or at least it inferred it, is that then you have the trust of the athlete, you have the trust of the parent, you have someone who is actively participating in a sport that they love, and they don't get hurt. So not only are you teaching appropriate techniques to not, or at least decrease the risk to other players, but the risk is going to be decreased in that player themselves, you know? So, and it really bores out not just with football, but again, with other sports, with heading in soccer, with spotting and cheerleading, in the weight room with football or other sports like basketball and lacrosse and things like that. So if you establish that culture from a young age, an evidence-based approach that's really looking at being proactive and doing injury prevention, certainly that's going to translate not throughout their scholastic career only, but into their collegiate career as well.
Let me get a phone call on the subject of what we do know about possible long-term effects here. This is Richard in Geneva, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. I've got a quick comment about the very last thing that you said. I've been a rugby coach and rugby player, and I can tell you that you can teach different ways of tackling that don't lead with the head. Of course, they don't have helmets, so that's how you have to tackle.
Absolutely.
There. But my question really has to do with the sub-concussive impact on youth players in particular. I've heard that it's actually the subconcussive impact over long-term periods that actually has the longest effect on chronic encephalopathy. I'm wondering what the doctor knows about that and whether that's why people who play on the line tend to have higher incidences and things like that. It's not so much the massive concussions as the ongoing repetitive head-to-head contact on the line.
Yeah.
And especially up through the age of 14.
Okay. Richard, I'm glad you called. I've got a couple of things I'm going to read in addition to that, and then I'm going to kick this over to Dr. Rizzoni. So why don't you hang there for a second. Richard's concern was echoed by a listener named Adam, who emailed to say, you know, he's got daughters. It's not really an issue with football, but if he had sons, he's pointing to research, and he sends a link from Carnegie Mellon University and the University of Rochester Medical Center. Quote, and I'll read it now. Quote, new research led by Carnegie Mellon University and the University of Rochester Medical Center indicates that concussions aren't the sole cause of damage to the brain in contact sports. A study of college football players found that typical hits, sustained from playing just one season caused structural changes to the brain. The researchers studied 38 University of Rochester players, putting accelerometers, devices that measure accelerative force, in their helmets for every practice and game. The players' brains were scanned in an MRI machine before and after a season of play. And here's a link to a study from Boston University. Researchers dug into the sports playing past of 214 former football players, and their finding was starting as a player in a tackle football league before age 12, at least in their study, corresponded with increased odds for clinical depression, apathy, and executive function problems. For example, diminished insight, judgment, and multitasking. Now, these studies, part of the issue, I think, is when you do them over time, if you are measuring players before a lot of these technological changes, technique changes come into play, it's hard to really see what the impact is. But the concern is there. So much so that Robert Cantu, who is a clinical professor of neurology and neurosurgery and co-founder of the CTE Center at Boston University, along with Mark Hyman, a professor of sports management at George Washington University, wrote a piece for the Washington Post last year. And they said, quote, if U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams asked for our advice, and he hasn't, we'd recommend that he issue the following statement. A Surgeon General's warning that tackle football is dangerous for children. The children who play tackle football absorb repeated hits to the head, and as adults, they're at higher risk of suffering cognitive deficits as well as behavioral and mood problems, end quote. Again, I don't know the sample size, when they collected the data, where they're studying, and whether they believe that the changes to practice, to technique, to technology can all be incorporated and really ameliorate this, or if they feel like that is just baked into the equation here. Dr. Rizzoni, let me start with you. What do you think?
All right, I'm going to make 2 points that has nothing to do with the question. I'm going to come back to the question. So one, in scientific research, one thing that we all have to acknowledge is publication bias. So studies like that are always going to be accepted as long as their methods are robust, because it shows something controversial and potentially worrisome about the health of kids. The thing that we don't know is how many studies that didn't show that in a similar population did not show that effect. Because oftentimes when you publish what's called a negative study, so a study that doesn't show that association, it won't be accepted by a journal because it's not very exciting. So isn't that horrible? But in some ways, scientific literature mirrors current mainstream media as well in some ways. So that's one thing I'll say. The other thing, though, I'll say, and this hasn't been brought up, but I think Coach will agree with me on this one, is that what this doesn't compare is what if kids don't play sports? We have an obesity epidemic in our country. I can list way more side effects of being overweight and out of shape and obese from not participating in sport, not having that social support network, not having that identity components that can help with mental health throughout both adolescence and throughout the rest of your life. So we always have to balance what we read in these studies, sometimes which are very scary about the health of kids, in terms of putting in context that's appropriate. The third point I'll make is that we take a lot of studies that look at NFL players or pro-level athletes or adult athletes, and we try to apply that information to younger populations. Now, that isn't the case with these studies, right? Because one's a collegiate athlete, so more recently a younger population, and the other one sounds specifically was in kids. So all that to say, I think that at this point, we just don't know. If my sons wanted to play football and I knew there was going to be a coach like Coach Leanne, my kids are at Brighton, I would let him play football because I know that he's going to be doing this appropriately. And you can even hear that he's doing practice differently than these collegiate football teams and that they're not doing contact as much. That said, I do think that we need to continue to research this. We need to really delve into that signal because both in short term and long term, we don't truly understand what the impact. Now, here's the other thing. We're not talking about soccer headers at all, right? We're not talking about concussions and lacrosse at all. So we're not talking about overtraining or body image or disordered eating in things like gymnastics and diving. So to Coach's point, he said this at the very beginning, each sport has an injury risk, and you have to take that into account. And not being active has a short and long-term risk as well. So I don't think that's what the caller was looking for, but that's I want to give the context and how to think about this very complicated and emotional issue.
Okay, and just kind of summing up, and then I'll kick it to the coach here. It sounds to me, Dr. Rizzoni, like what you are saying is you're not denigrating these studies. You want more and continual more and better research, especially research based on a time when a lot of changes have been implemented. If we are going to answer the question, is there a way to mostly mitigate out some of these long-term concerns about subconcussive hits, brain, et cetera, or if we're going to determine that that is inevitable if somebody is playing long-term in a game like football? It sounds to you like that answer has not been established yet. Is that
correct.
Fair?
And we're working on it. Trust me, we are working on it both here. UB has a great center as well. There's lots of national groups looking at this. So the great thing is the right people are looking at this question, which is good.
How do you feel about it, Coach?
You know, I like so many other things in the news these days, I always defer to, you know, the people that are smarter than me, the experts in the field. I think that's one of the things that's really helped us is that if a child is diagnosed or suspected to have a concussion, it's out of my hands. It's turned over to our athletic trainer, who's then turned it over to their physician, and they don't come back till they tell me it's okay for that kid to come back. It was not like that when I played. I can tell you that much. So I welcome it. I think the more research, the better. I think the more medical experts that can be involved in the care of a child that does suffer, regardless of the type of injury, whether it's a concussion, whether it's a knee, whether it's whatever, the better. Because you know what? I don't understand all of that at that level. And I'd much rather an expert tell me when it's safe for a kid. And I go back to the fact that I'm a parent first, and I have three boys that play the game. If something happens to them, I'm not going to make the call. I'm going to want an expert to tell me what to do.
Yeah. And I also take Dr. Rizzoni's point that, you know, we haven't talked about soccer this hour. Football is sort of the sexy target for head issues. Kids in soccer have had such head issues that there have been movement to ban headers outside of the box, which makes sense to me. I was nothing more than a mediocre soccer player in high school, and I was awful with my head. I just never learned good techniques with it, and I dreaded headers, and I took some real shots. Probably says a lot about my mental state today. But it just doesn't get talked about as much. On the culture side of things, you know, some of the concerns expressed by parents this hour, Evie's phone call is one of them, was that, you know, I don't know if I want to put my kid in the sport because the culture is, you know, super sort of cranked up, you know, kind of this toxic energy, hit, celebrate injury, celebrate pain, etc. And what you've tried to demonstrate is that it doesn't have to be that way. Similarly, we have this viral clip yesterday of a former NFL quarterback, Trent Dilfer, who now coaches. He's the head coach at Lipscomb Football Academy in Tennessee. And he went nuts at one of his players on the sidelines and had to be separated from his player. And I can't tell you, Coach, how many people shared that clip on social media and said, you know what, though? This kid's going to be better for it. That's how you get the most out of him. You know, parents may not like it, but that's a coach caring about his kid. I don't agree with that. I see somebody who's lost control and is teaching all the wrong lessons, and I don't think it requires that to get the best out of kids. What do you think?
No, I'm on the same page with you. I think, you know, we were told a long time ago, you don't put your hands on a kid, right? I mean, I think that's basic. Whether I don't care what you're coaching, whatever you're doing involved with a child, you don't put your hands on a kid. And Trent Dilfer crossed the line in many ways. The other aspect, and I guess to play devil's advocate, even though I totally agree with you, we don't know the relationship between the player and the kid, right? We don't know what interactions they've had in the past, the trust level, the family's trust level. That doesn't excuse what he did. He should not have put his hands on him.
No, you're right. But, we should always ask for context.
Right.
Et cetera,
but I think there is a part, and that's, again, I circle back to how you started this segment with Peyton Manning talking about being caretakers of the game. That Trent Dilfer was not a caretaker of the game. We have a perception that there is this, you know, football is a contact sport. I'm not going to pretend that it's not. There is a violent aspect to it. But there's also, you know, if you let it, you know, the toxic part of it, that we as caretakers of the game need to do a better job policing. It's fine to be aggressive. It's fine. But there's context for it. There's appropriateness for it. It isn't just, you know, go hit that person at all costs. Whatever happens, happens. And that's up to them. It isn't that. It's a sport. I happen to think it's honestly, it's beautiful. It's a brilliant sport. There's so many layers to it. I love so many aspects of it. And unfortunately, you get bundled up with the rap. And I know Dr. Zoni mentioned earlier in relation to the concussion studies of what they see on TV, of what people see on TV. And that is such a small fraction to the youth and high school football experience.
Yeah. 30 seconds, Dr. Rizzoni. I imagine you're glad to see networks like ESPN not glamorizing the biggest hits all the time in these highlight packages anymore.
Yeah, that's really tough. I mean, it's hard because I do think that adds to the culture and the expectation. Whereas I think coach knows the faster and the smarter you play, that's going to make the best team. You know, you guys practicing together, having that camaraderie, having that social support for each other, that's the best team. Not the team that hitting the hardest necessarily, because you don't have to hit as hard if you can anticipate that pass and intercept it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what the great coaches are doing.
Dr. Rizzoni, thanks for making the time. My 9-year-old asked me recently, you know, when they get tackled in the pros, does it hurt? And I said, you know what? If you do it with a good technique, it can be a big hit and everyone's okay. And it doesn't hurt. I mean, you might get a little sore, but it doesn't hurt in the way that you're not injured. You know, we'll see the impact on youth sports in the future. But I want to thank Dr. Rizzoni. Thanks for making the time, Katie. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And Coach Steve Lehan, head coach at Brighton High School. Go get him, Coach. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. This was great.
More connections coming up.
This program is a production of WXXI Public Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. The broadcast is meant for the private use of our audience. Any rebroadcast or use in another medium without expressed written consent of WXXI is strictly prohibited. Connections with Evan Dawson is available as a podcast. Just click on the Connections link at WXXINews.org.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Bridges of Mendon, a senior residence in Mendon committed to providing care with dignity, serving the health and well-being of each individual in a home setting. Learn more at bridgesofmendon.org.
Some places, like Tennessee, haven't been bound by a federal eviction ban for some time, but Memphis is working hard to distribute rental assistance and prevent evictions.
We know that instead of just getting one person settled and stable, we could do 100 at a time.
How they're doing it this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4. This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
From WXXI News, I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections. Whether we like it or not, kids will eventually discover pornography somewhere. It's almost inevitable. And the older they get, the more they're likely to bump into pornography on the internet or with their friends or in settings that parents or guardians don't have any sort of control over, watch over. And that's why there's been an ongoing debate for the last couple of months in very interesting publications about what should be happening in regards to education and pornography. That doesn't mean show kids porn in classrooms, but it means if you don't teach them about what it is and what it really shouldn't be or isn't, then they might get their own opinion somewhere else. But the purists say that's wrong. Keep it out of the classroom entirely. We'll talk about it coming up.